Everyone to a very fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. I am so giddy about the show we are bringing you today. This is one of our personal favorites, and the current production being done here in New York is absolutely mind-blowing. Joining us today, we have the actress playing the role of Dr. Lorna James in the production, Michelle Austin. She's here to talk to us about the National Theater's presentation of The Effect. It's playing now through March 31st at The Shed, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting theshed.org. For anyone out there who does not know this work, it is absolutely phenomenal. It will leave you with more questions and answers in the best way possible. And this current production is just visually incredible, and the acting is sublime. So with that, let's welcome on our guest, Michelle. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
I am so honored to have you here. As I keep saying, the show was just phenomenal. It was so good. And the updates to the script are just incredible. This is just the beauty of the show is also in its simplicity, this particular production. So I want to start by asking you, can you tell our listeners a bit about what The Effect is about?
The show is set in a drugs trial. So you see four people involved in that, two of the volunteers and the supervising doctor and the doctor that's running the experiment. And what you're exploring is the sets of relationships, the two young people who are involved in the drugs trial, but also you are exploring the relationship between the two doctors because they have a past history as well. And I suppose the show is examining what is love and how does it start? And is it important where it starts? Or, you know, it's also exploring depression because they're actually on a trial for an antidepressant drug. So I suppose, yeah, the themes, the big themes are love and are depression. But we're very much not in the world of white coats and files of things. And, you know, it's incredibly stripped back. And I would say what I say to people is like it is like watching a gig. It's like watching a concert. That's sort of what it looks like. It's incredibly stylish and sort of visually arresting kind of piece. And some people go with that and really love it. And I'm really interested in those people who are like, you know, kind of must walk in and go, what is this? Where am I? What am I looking at? Because you walk into the space and it's completely a sort of bare stage. I don't want too many spoilers. A lot of lights and a stage that does some incredible things, a floor that does incredible things, but that's it. A couple of chairs and a bucket. And that's all you've got, really. But yeah, it's a very exciting thing to watch.
That is amazing. I would love to know, how did you come upon this play, The Effect?
So, I mean, it's your dream, isn't it? It's the actor's dream. I had worked with Jamie. I'd auditioned for Cyrano, so I didn't know him before that. And so obviously we did Cyrano in the West End and over here. And so it was the dream. It was the dream thing that, you know, somebody calls you and says, or, you know, messages you and says, I'd really like you to do this play. And to be honest with you, I read it and I was like, and I genuinely mean this, you know, no BS at all. Like, I genuinely read the play and was like, I can't believe he's offering me this, because this is an amazing part. Like, I was like, this part is like amazing, right? I could, you know, it was like, I can't even put it into words now. It was like, and then there was a little, you know, there's all of that to-ing and fro-ing and because of dates with other things, because I was filming something. And so I was very worried about getting to the start of rehearsals. But it was literally that. It was an offer and from Jamie, you know, and it, I think now, you know, I think, my God, you know, because I think this is some of the best work I've ever done. And working with incredible people. I mean, there was also all of that. It was hilarious, you know, sort of telling my kids who are like not kids, they're like 16 and 23. You know, I'm working with Papa Esadu and I'm working with Taylor Russell, and they're a bit like, what are you talking about? Like, they're just like, I mean, so I had a swift lesson in just how hot Taylor was. I'm just like, it was just like nuts. Like, my daughter was like, this is nuts. But obviously now she's just my workmate and she's, you know, my colleague and everything. And I knew, and I sort of knew Papa to sort of wave at, you know, across a, you know, a theatre foyer. And I knew Cobner, we have friends in common, and we'd sort of moved around each other for years, kind of, but never got to work with each other, but really, you know, respected each other. And so it's been a kind of dream, really. It has hit me at exactly the right point in my life. You know, I am a middle-aged woman, and being a middle-aged woman is complicated and not necessarily always nice. It has kind of, yeah, everything has kind of come at the right time. It's come at the right time. And I'm really struck by, like, how many people talk to me afterwards about their own mental health struggles and issues. And I'm really touched by it and moved by it, that people feel able to say stuff to me about it, because, you know, I sort of take it as an indication that what I'm doing is right and truthful and comes from a place of sort of, yeah, of all of those things, you know. And that has touched a lot of people. It's been a really special thing, like, honestly, a really special thing. I mean, I don't know how many more of them I have in me. It's quite exhausting. But, like, yeah, it's been a really wonderful thing, you know, to work with Jamie, and long may it continue. I feel like he's just one of the most exciting sort of theatre makers out there, really. And what's wonderful about the way he works is, like, you know, he pairs everything back and he strips things back, and he's got a very particular kind of taste, like him and Sutra and John, how they all work together. But actually, there's loads of freedom in that, even though it might look like, you know, there's kind of a lot of freedom in, you know, the look, the aesthetic, the, you know, everything being stripped back, the no props, because it kind of challenges you. It challenges you a lot. It's just, it is you, just you. You and your old body on stage. And it's wonderful. But yeah, I mean, I wish I could sort of tell you a glamorous kind of story about how I auditioned 15 times and there was a phone call. I was walking down the street. I was like, no way. But it literally was. It literally was a message saying, would you like to do this? And me shouting down the phone, yes!
Oh, I love it. Well, this is a production that we've been lucky enough to have come over from the National Theatre. And there are a few updates to the show itself from the original script. I'm curious to know, what has it been like developing this piece, especially here in New York?
I mean, Lucy, who wrote the play, Lucy Prebble, who's also one of the lead writers on Succession. So that kind of gives you a kind of flavour of what her sort of style and just general mad talents are. She sort of, in the original script, she actually wrote that you should feel able to change things to suit the actors who are playing the parts. So background or whatever, and also there's a bit in the play where the two of the people kind of showing up to each other, and they kind of, somebody does a dance or somebody does a trick or something. And I think in the original production, one of the actors could tap dance. So he tap danced, you know, in this, like, Taylor is, and then in the original, I think Billy Piper, she could do some sort of gymnastics or something. And then this, we've got Taylor is really, she's like a beautiful ballet dancer. She can really move. And, you know, so things have been changed. But obviously when she wrote it originally, there were white actors playing it, the parts. She changed, before we got in the rehearsal room, she changed things for Taylor. So Taylor's character comes from Canada, and Papa is from East London. So his character's like from Hackney, from East London. And then we sort of, and then also Cobbiner, he's actually, his family's from Ghana, but his character, they made him Nigerian, from Nigeria. And we talked about in the rehearsal room, because obviously this is not a play about race, but it's not that's not what it's about. But what we did talk about very early on were what things can inform these characters, but without it becoming like you just kind of chucked some references on, which is, you know, we've all seen that in things. You just think, oh no, I don't believe that. Don't believe you, stopped believing you. And Lucy was incredibly, she's really tuned in, man. So we had some conversations about what the relationship would be between Dr. James, who I play, and Toby Seeley, who Cobbiner plays, but what that is when, because there's a class thing that is happening there, which might be slightly lost, unfortunately, on American audience, but that's fine. But, you know, the British audience gets it, that there certainly is a class thing that's going on between somebody who comes from maybe a middle-class West African background and somebody who's from a working-class Caribbean background. In London, those things are, we know what those relationships are. And so that she was able to kind of put some of that, sprinkle a little bit of that without sort of piling on, because also that's not her play to write. Right? That's not what this play is about. And also the other thing that we talked about, which is very relevant, which wasn't relevant when she originally wrote the play, was about, you know, we just come out of a pandemic. So we just come out of people just not trusting drugs, not trusting big pharma, you know, and that's very much an issue within the Black community back at home. And, you know, and obviously we have, you know, got all of these, the history of all of these experiments that took place on communities all over the world. So that was something that was kind of, again, you can talk about, because that is an issue. But like I say, it's in there, but it's not, you know, it's not about that. But certainly when the two doctors go at each other, that's the stuff that comes up, class. And actually the drugs, do they work? And what is it, you know, and the ethics of all of it. And then, yeah, we've had little jokey little changes. Like we refer to, in the New York version now, we refer to Cornell, whereas we used to refer, we were trying to think of an equivalent university. Like it's a kind of, there's a joke about like a rubbish experiment. So obviously we couldn't use the English equivalent. So we had kind of fun with a few days of kind of trying out which universities we were going to go for. But really, we haven't really had to change too much just for New York. I mean, we have to slow down. And obviously, there are laughs that come in different places, or laugh, you know, a big laugh. We get a big laugh. I don't want to spoil it for people who might be going to see it, but it's really funny, like the things that, yeah, Americans really laugh at, the cultural reference that they really enjoy. Yeah. But not too much has changed. I mean, I think that we, you know, we slow down a bit because we have to. But, I mean, I think that's about it, really.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, kind of snowballing off all that, I would love to know, what is the message or thought you hope audiences will take away from your piece?
Oh, I hope that it validates those uncomfortable feelings for some people, and again, especially as a middle-aged woman. But I've had a lot of women come up to me afterwards in the bar or whatever and talk to me about their experiences, but also a lot of young people too. So, you know, I think I said that earlier, you know, I hope that people ask lots of questions about, you know, medication or what have you, but also I hope people are kind of swept away by the love story in the middle of it, and I think that people are, and what I love about the play is it does end in a way that people have a question and having a conversation with each other afterwards about what does she do? What does she do? What is that last image? And I really enjoy that. And usually it's funny, isn't it? I think when, as a theatre goer, I'm a bit like, just tell me the story. But I think being in this production has made me go, oh no, I kind of like having a conversation. Like, oh no, but what did she do? Did she do that or did she do that? And yeah. But I think, listen, it's a right. I mean, I'm going to be accused of, I'm trying to use words that don't make me sound like some sort of whimsical Brit, but like, it's a rollicking kind of like ride for an hour and 40. Like, it really like moves along at a pace. So I think, you know, I think people kind of get a blast out of it kind of coming at you so much, but there's loads to take away from it. But yeah, I mean, it's a love story, but also it's about the mess of love stories and all of that. Yeah.
That's lovely, though. I think that's spot on. I really do. And that leads to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to the effect?
Who do I hope will have access? Well, everyone. Everyone. I mean, you know, I'm sort of, like I say, excited by the diversity of the people out there. We should have that. We should have that in our audiences. And, you know, and it's great to see, you know, young African-American people coming to see the show. And it really makes me, really amuses me even still that people don't think this is my accent. It really amuses me. Still out there. But yeah, we do exist. Black British people, we really are. This is what we sound like. But I mean, I want everyone to have access to it. I mean, you know, I think I want older audiences to come, you know, I want them to enjoy it and potentially be challenged, but I just think that might even sound patronizing, and that sounds patronizing. Just, you know, you want everyone to see your work and to enjoy your work. I can't say it enough, really. I think, you know, theatre is going to die if only, you know, rich older people can go. It's like, you know, we need interesting new work. We need to inspire new people to come and get on board, you know, and do. And some of the best stuff I've seen, like, you know, recently is people who've like been plugging away. Like when I was here last time, obviously I went to see A Strange Loop, and that was like, right? But that dude was like plugging away, like really, like, so, and that was incredible to see that on Broadway. And, you know, I didn't love all of it, but bloody hell, I was so glad that he'd made it and like so, and challenged by it, and to be in a Broadway theatre and see this, you know, this larger Black gay man's story was just like, that was like wonderful. It's so wonderful. Back in the UK, I've just seen something at the National Theatre, which is actually really traditional as a play. But in a weird way, that's what sort of makes it so interesting. And I think it might go into the West End, but if you know, I know you've got people who go and watch things, and it's called Till the Stars Come Down. And that's like, and it's set in the north of England, and it's a very particular community. And I've got a friend from that community. And it's the kind of three sisters story, but it's kind of tackling kind of racism within that area, because there's a lot of Eastern European people who've come to work in that area and things like that. And it's really wonderful play. So, yeah, I mean, I think I want access. I want everyone to, I want people go to the theatre when they feel like they, you know, they're seeing stuff about themselves reflected back at them. So as long as you keep the work diverse, you'll get diverse people coming to see it. You'll keep it going. If you make the same play with the same people doing the same old thing, it's boring and it's stale, you know? And it's like, oh yeah, I want everyone to have access, you know?
Well, on the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guest a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I know we're a little short on time, but I can't let you go without asking my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm going to cheat. Can I have a couple? So the first play that I went to see, like a proper play, was Coriolanus, and I'm by no means a Shakespeare geek, okay? But the reason why it's important is that it was just that first experience of being in a proper theatre. It was a small theatre, and it was at the Almeida, but of really connecting, really understanding what I was watching, because we'd studied it at school. That was the transformative moment of going, oh, I get this, I understand this, I could be part of this. And I must have been about 15, and I can tell you about the feelings, but I can't really tell you a lot about the play, but I just remember thinking, I remember seeing the bare wall of the theatre, so it had like a brick wall, which is a bit like going to St. Anne's Warehouse, I guess. It was kind of that vibe, and I just remember thinking, and we did a workshop with the actors afterwards, so they were explaining, you know, it was for school children, they were explaining the play and everything, and all I can just remember is thinking, I get it, I can do this, I could be part of this thing, you know, but that was just a feeling. And then later on, I'm a real laugh whore, so I love to laugh. I also love to go and see musical theatre, although I'm not as somebody who does musical theatre. So all the things that I have really enjoyed are generally things that make me fall off my chair laughing. I just think that it's hard to be funny. I think people think it's easy, and it's not. And to sustain an audience laughing. And there was one show, I mean, none of this is highbrow, I'm telling you that right now, but I went to see, there was a play on at the National called, I can't believe I'm outing myself. So it was called Carry On Camping. And was it called Carry On Camping and Cleo? I think that's what it's called. And it's about, in Britain, we have a very particular kind of film from the 60s and 70s. And it was kind of like a repertory company of actors. And they were very saucy kind of films. They were really sort of end of the pier humour, they call it. Very sort of silly. Anyway, and they did a play about some of the actors in it, because they're iconic in our country. And there was just an actor in it called Adam Godley, and he was playing Kenneth Williams. And there was another actress called Samantha Spiro, and she was playing Barbara Windsor. And there was a whole little skit in it, and I just remember I literally fell off my chair laughing. I mean, I fell off my chair laughing. I mean, I love that when that happens in the theatre. So that was like an amazing point. I'm not going to have just one theatrical moment, because they just can't be just one. I went to see The Follies. That was amazing. I mean, I love people who can sing. Like, because to me, that is like a superpower that's like a transformative thing. So yeah, going to see The Follies was incredible. I met Adrienne Warren the other day. I mean, I went to see Tina Turner. I took my mother to see that. I was like, that is a superpower, which you have been gifted from I don't know where. But you know, there's not just, there just can't be one, because I think people are doing amazing things all the time. I mean, to be honest with you, and I was in it, but I don't really care. I think what James McAvoy did as Cyrano was really, he wasn't given the gifts and the prizes that he should have been given, because I think he's like an amazing person to work with. He's like fearless, man. And yeah, I think working with him, I loved doing that. Every night I loved being with him, and he's like a great sort of company leader, and he's a thoroughly nice chap. So yeah, that was wonderful. But I feel, Yeah, I feel like there isn't just a one moment. I'm really aware that some of my choices might make me sound a bit low, but also I'm a bit like, I mean, I feel like, you know, I feel like there are so many wonderful performances out there that I don't, yeah, I don't really want to pick one. I mean, there's, and all the things that I'm going to pick would be things that you're probably, your listeners won't know. There's a wonderful actress called Cecilia Noble, who you won't know here, but she does lots in the UK. And she was in To Kill a Mockingbird on the West End. I'm trying to think of things that maybe there are. But they did Amen Corner at the National. And she, again, she did things in that that made me fall off my chair. She's wonderful. There are loads of unsung people out there who are just getting on with it and doing great work, and who aren't, you know, the people necessarily on the red carpet or, you know what I mean, doing all of that stuff. But, you know, and I suppose I'm into that because I feel like I'm one of them. But, you know, so I might, yeah, big up the people who are just, you know, getting on with it, who aren't, you know, the big stars. But yeah, there's been lots. I'm looking forward to seeing Imelda Staunton do Hello Dolly, and me and one of my best friends have got tickets for that first Saturday. I'm like, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm sure some other things will sort of, I'll you know, we'll end this and then I'll be like, oh, you didn't say that. And you didn't say that. But it's like, I've seen so many great shows. I mean, I have to also say, I have to big up my husband, who I'm missing a lot. And one of the best things, I mean, that he's a writer, and one of the most, the best things, the best moments ever was he adapted the War Horse. And that first time seeing that puppet come out and turn from the foal to the big horse was just like, it's just like, wow. Like, that was just like such an amazing moment. So I've got to, yeah, that was a great moment.
Those are amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those. Incredible. We'll have to have you back. I want to hear more about all the things you've seen. This is amazing. Well, as we wrap things up, I just have two last questions. And the first being, do you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug?
Stage-wise, not. Film-wise, yes. So I'm in a feature film which, well, UK, I think, is going to be coming out in autumn, called Hard Truths, and that's directed by Mike Lee with Marianne Jean-Baptiste. So that, I don't know what that will be doing in the US, if it's going to be similar time. So I think that is the most immediate thing, and obviously there are always things bubbling away. To be honest with you, I need to get home. I need to be at home. I feel like I've sort of gone from one thing to another pretty consistently, very, very luckily. And I need to see my baby girl. And I don't know, the equivalent is my daughter is about to sit her, I think they're like your SATs, like she's 16, like, you know, yeah. And yeah, she needs a mum home, man. So I'm sort of really looking forward to just being at home for a bit. But yeah, no theatre at the moment. I need a little break. I need a little R&R, little beach holiday, something like that.
A well-deserved holiday.
That's, oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, my final question is, if our listeners would like more information about The Effect or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Oh, gosh, they can find me on Instagram. I'm Madame Austin on Instagram. I am on Twitter. I can't call it X, but I don't know for how long I'm going to be on there, because that is a whole other thing that we can take a whole podcast about. So I'll just say that I'm on Instagram. So, you know, you can find me there. Not that I'm a very, you know, I'm not on there all the time. And that's me, really. And other than that, you'll find me in my allotment. Do you have allotments here? I don't know. Do you have like little, when you can have a little garden, And but it's not your garden, it's where you grow vegetables.
Yes, yes, like a community garden. Okay. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So this is where I out myself as a, you know, as a committed allotmenteer. I am a gardener, and that's where you'll find me doing that. And if no, I'm not doing that, I'll probably be drinking gin somewhere. So that's that's it.
That's a good drink of choice. No complaints
yeah,
here.
Come on.
Well, wonderful. Well, Michelle, this has been an absolute honor and pleasure. I wish we could keep talking for hours on end. This is incredible. You are such a profound theater artist, and you've got such great insight to share. Not to mention this incredible show that you are doing. Oh, it really is powerful.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you a lot. Thank you.
My guest today has been the actress playing the role of Dr. Lorna James, Michelle Austin. She currently is in the National Theater's presentation of The Effect, which is playing now through March 31st at The Shed. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting theshed.org. Also, we have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But run, don't walk, get your tickets now. This is one of our creators' picks. We cannot recommend it highly enough. It is absolutely groundbreaking. It will leave a lasting impact on you. The show, again, is The Effect, playing now through March 31st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.